The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live. You're listening to Germ Warfare with Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Germ Warfare at tntradio.live. That's my email address. Send me an email as always. Let me know where in the world you are mailing me from. The last couple of days, I've been reading a little blurb about this Better Way conference that's underway. It started yesterday and it's going all the way through to Sunday. But I thought what I would do is to get ChatGPT to spin the blurb into a different way, different language style. And I think yesterday's was just the absolute best. It spun the blurb into hip hop style and it rhymed. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to read you ChatGPT's version of the same blurb, but done in a movie voiceover. A trailer voiceover from the 90s. But let me first read you the original blurb. Here it is. Okay, so join TNT Radio and the annual pilgrimage to the healing city of Bath in Southwest England to hear the pioneers and innovators of our time reveal how excellent health has been hidden from us and explore what the reveal means for the better world we are co-creating. The Better Way Conference 2023 at the Apex Hotel in Bath, UK, from this Thursday, June 1 to Sunday, June 4. Unveiling a better way for health, freedom, and sovereignty. The Better Way Conference 2023, heard only on TNT Radio. Right. So this is the same blurb, but now ChatGPT has spun it into the style of a movie trailer. Hang on, where did I have it now? Hold on. Here we go. In a world filled with mysteries and hidden truths, TNT Radio invites you to embark on an extraordinary journey. Prepare yourself for the annual pilgrimage to the majestic healing city of Bath, nestled in the enchanting lands of Southwest England. Witness the legends, the pioneers, and the visionaries of our time as they step into the spotlight to unveil the unimaginable. Brace yourself as the secrets of excellent health shrouded in darkness are finally brought to light. The revelations will shake the very foundations of your beliefs and open doors to a better world, one we are all co-creating together. The year is 2023 and destiny awaits at the Better Way Conference. Venture forth to the prestigious Apex Hotel in Bath, UK, where the stage is set from Thursday, June 1 to Sunday, June 4. Prepare to be spellbound as a better way for health, freedom, and sovereignty is revealed, igniting a spark that shall forever change the course of history. But beware, for this grand spectacle is exclusive, heard only on TNT Radio. So don't miss your chance to be a part of this epic journey. Buckle up and get ready for a breathtaking experience as we dive deep into the unknown. The Better Way Conference 2023, a tale that will echo through the ages. Get ready to witness the extraordinary, for greatness awaits. and it all starts with TNT Radio. I love that. My favorite, Alex, is yesterday's hip hop version. The one before that was sort of the more colloquial language. But man, how smart is this language stuff? Hey, this language. I wish I knew how it works. The only catchphrase I know is what neurological networks or something. That's the term that they use, or neuro networks. I wish I knew how this stuff works. It is incredible. Anyway, let's get to John. My name is Jerem. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
Factual news as you need it.
They are a reliable source.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
John O'Sullivan, what do you think of ChatGPT?
Oh, well, there you go. I've had this conversation with a lot of people recently, Jeremy, about the dangers of artificial intelligence and how sentient beings, the robots are rising and it's going to take over the world. And it's, to be frank, I've spoken to quite a few experts on this matter, and it goes back to the old concept from the early days of computing, 30, 40 years ago, the concept of GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. The problem with every system so far devised by human hands is it's only as good as the people building it, programming it. And there's no way that I can see, having spoken to many experts, there's no way that we are at that point yet where AI, artificial intelligence, ChatGPT or whatever, there's no way that we're at the point now we've got the Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator prospect. It's just not there yet, Jeremy. It's scare tactics. And I think those who want to frighten people, they're all over this one like a rash. And I can honestly say, I mean, I've looked hard. I've tried to find something that has substance to worry me. I can't, because I know it's the same people that have cooked up the climate fraud, who cooked up the pandemic fraud. It's the same level of intellect. You know, there are really evil people out there. Don't get me wrong. There are very, very evil people out there we should fear, and they should be in jail. But the problem is, Jeremy, that because they are that evil, they have to work in small communities, and they can't really go to the great and the good and say, please be involved in this demonic process, you know, with our artificial intelligence, because we're going to take over the world. Doesn't work that way. And, you know, it is true that you can have wonderful technology that can play chess and beat you at chess, but that's within parameters that are known, defined parameters. The real world has no parameters. If you go out in the real world, anything can happen. You have to be prepared for the unexpected. Artificial intelligence can't cope with it. You see those robots that are so brilliant. They're like, got limbs, haven't they? They've got the robotic limbs. They're all articulated. They've got legs. They've got arms. They can jump up and down. They can do backflips. And you think, oh, my God, they've pretty much conquered everything that they need to conquer in terms of coping with reality. But really, it's not. It's programmed. And, you know, I do get the point that we should be prepared for some paradigm shift, some breakthrough that will allow artificial intelligence to be truly sentient. Be mindful, but we're not there yet, Jeremy.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. Look, I've had this conversation a few times now with various people also. And at the end of the day, it's just a tool. And I mean, do you remember the whole Y2K thing and when cell phones came out and people were saying very much, you know, the same sort of thing. I'm sure when vacuum cleaners came out, people were getting upset about this. You know, this is going to excuse me. Sorry, I just had to clear my throat there. People are always going to get frustrated when there's a new technology. And at the end of the day, it's not ever going to be sentient because it's always going to be a set of algorithms. You know, it can't get to the point where it will even be remotely close to, I don't know, an animal. It's just responding to various inputs. And sure, it can learn, but it only learns, as you say, within certain parameters.
Yeah. Yeah. The danger, Jeremy, it's a real danger, and it's not quite artificial intelligence, it's transhumanism, where you take these dystopian people, these psychopaths, who will volunteer themselves to have augmentation, and that they're doing it now. You know, I remember growing up, I watched a show, TV show with Lee Majors called The $6 Million Man, where you've got bionic arm, you know, you've got supervision, you've got all these wonderful devices. You know, that is more of a risk where you've got a human brain that is somehow connected to a device. Exoskeletons are real, for example. US military has the technology for exoskeletons, where you can put a soldier in a frame that all of a sudden gives them the ability to live 3 tons. That's kind of transhumanism. So the human brain is, you know, the thing pulling the strings, if you like. But there's the machine, there's the computer system that's backing them up. And I don't think we can't bypass that step yet. I think we've got to go through that step first. And everything starts off with a military application. You think back to when sat-navs first came out, you know, when you first had the ability in your smartphone to navigate around your town, you know, start your car up and flick a button on your sat-nav. And all that technology comes from military technology. So you will see it on the battlefield before you'll see it in day-to-day life. And again, the proving ground at the moment. Yeah, the proving ground at the moment for the high-tech world is the conflict in Ukraine. That effectively is the cutting edge of usable military hardware and AI. We can see the technology with the drones, you know, is fantastic. And the genius here that I can pick up. And I really enjoy listening to your show with Brian Bolette, because he's one of my favorite analysts on the Ukraine war. But Scott Ritter and others, you know, Conor McGregor and so forth, they've picked up on this idea that the way to win a conflict, to be successful, is to have mass production at cheap, low cost, you know, affordable cost. But AI is so expensive and it's so demanding of investment. And also, there's no guarantee on return. It's better to do it the way the Russians are doing it, with the way they fight their wars. They go low tech as possible and work on mass production. And I think that paradigm, you know, what we're seeing now in the war in Ukraine transfers very neatly into civilian life, where we'll definitely have more use of drones. Drones will become endemic. I think that's quite likely. We'll see. The proving ground is the battlefield of Ukraine, if you like. The ability of drones to prove themselves as effective in, I mean, I'm seeing the good use of it. Ukraine is the bad use of it. But I'm thinking in terms of rushing medical supplies to where it's needed, that kind of thing. Urgent deliveries. You know, it's not all bad news. And exactly. I think the fear factor is something that we focus on too much. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the spinning Jenny, you know, back in the Industrial Revolution. I grew up with the horse and cart, you know, I'm that old. When the motor car came in, we were told about how it's going to be, you know, ruin the world and we'd be polluted and everything would die. But no, it's a wonderful thing. Embrace it. It takes sensible people to run the show. We're having a change, paradigm shift in terms of who runs the show now.
But that's different.
It's a completely different thing, isn't it? Politics meets science, and it's not an easy mix, as you can see.
John, look, I understand the concerns with AI. Elon has spoken a lot about, you know, the potential risks in the future. But ChatGPT is essentially just a chatbot that's very advanced, but it's just a language model that can talk to you and help you. It's obviously biased. I mean, if you type in anything to do with vaccines, mRNA, COVID, or any somewhat alternative theory, it's going to push out to the mainstream. But around that, it's still just a tool that can help you with, you know, non-editorialized content. And when people fear it, I do wonder what is it exactly that they're fearing.
Yeah, it's always the fear of the unknown, Jeremy, because the way we are in society is we've progressed so rapidly and specialized. We've over-specialized as individuals. Everybody now seems to go to university. 50% of the population in the UK and the US go to university. They study these pieces of paper that effectively makes them think they're smart. But they're smart in only one narrow field, and they don't seem to know what goes on in other fields, and that's the problem. We're all running around like headless chickens, wondering how things work. And you and I, normal people like us, when our car breaks down, what do? We phone a mechanic. You know, if a washing machine breaks down, we call a plumber. You know, certain things in life you delegate. It's called specialization. The human species has specialized for thousands of years. It's no coincidence that human brain over the last 200,000 years is shrunk by 15%. And the reason it's shrunk by 15% is because of the very concept of specialization. We're making life easier for ourselves by delegation. We live in communities for a reason. It's always better to have somebody in the group who's good at knitting, to knit, not to be sexist, but whoever good at knitting, somebody who's good at hunter-gathering, go and hunt. If somebody's very good at solving problems and so forth, great. You know, if you've got great eyesight, usually Professor Gloria Moss, who's a wonderful advocate for this way of thinking. She's an education expert, been on my show a few times in the UK. She says that it's a gender difference. Men and women are different. And you're born with certain gifts. We're all born with certain gifts. I mean, I'm a tall guy. I'm good at certain things, but I'll never be a jockey, Jeremy. I'll never be an airline pilot. I'm too tall. I'm too big. You know, other people are smaller. They're more adept at certain things. We have to accept that. It's like you're playing your role on a team. Say you play softball, say you play rugby, American football or whatever, basketball. You play a position, don't you? You specialize in a position, and that's how society is structured. And we have to accept that. And we work as a collective very neatly. And I think we have to be aware of that. The problem is, over many generations, there are those, the psychopathic elite, who are obviously focused so intently on gaining power that they've got no qualms about manipulating us. And there's no quid pro quo. There's no, if you help me, I'll help you. It's all a very one-sided thing. This is why we have so many billionaires today. You know, the selfish elite are just not thinking about the others in society. And I think we're at that point in now. We're going to have to restructure. We're going to have to kind of regroup a bit, you know, bring in, you know, rein in the uber rich. I know we talk about billionaires, but many of us actually think there's trillionaires out there. They're not even talked about. I mean, it's a nonsense to say that Elon Musk is the richest person in the world.
Yeah, it is nonsense.
It's not. It's Rothschild. All flim-flam. It's public show, isn't it?
I think Rothschild is the richest person in the world.
Exactly that. Yeah.
Mm. Okay, John, hold on. I'm just quickly going to go to a break. I'll be back with you shortly. My name is Jerm. I'm chatting to John O'Sullivan. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Rick Munn.
How come these people are never far from each other? A lot is being made of connections of dodgy people. Talk about, you know, Charles's affiliation with Jimmy. Are never far from each other. A lot is being made of connections of dodgy people. Talk about, you know, Charles's affiliation with Jimmy Savile for 30 odd years. His great uncle, I think, Louis Mountbatten, his mentor, was a very disgusting character. His brother, Prince Andrew, has his own skeletons in the closet. Seen a picture this morning of Charles grinning and grimacing with Philip Schofield, who was also pictured beside someone called Fern Cotton, another TV female wannabe. She was a girlfriend of a chap called Ian Watkins, a singer for a band from Wales who was jailed for attempted rape of a baby. She's went to ground as well. And I suppose what I'm trying to say is this. These people seem to operate in circles where they're all either practicing or linked to people that are practicing wicked things. And that's not just hearsay. These are things that people have been convicted for and people have been found out for. So I'm not casting aspersions on Fern Cotton or whoever she happens to be. I'm just saying it's odd.
Rick Munn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between, it really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
News to start your day.
Good morning. How about some news?
Just tell your smart device to wake up.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
John, we were talking a little bit about transhumanism before the break. And I had a conversation with Joe Allen, who does a show or had a show on Steve Bannon's War Room. He's very, very experienced in the field of transhumanism. And he essentially said to me that the idea of transhumanism on the one hand is scary, but on the other hand is completely natural in the sense that a pacemaker, for example, in somebody's heart, to some degree, that is a transhuman aspect because it's artificially helping somebody live in a way that's slightly outside of the biological. Remember Oscar Pistorius, the sprinter? He had those fake legs. What do you call them? Blades.
Yeah, blades.
That's also a type of transhumanism. So there is. So the point I'm trying to make is that what Joe said to me is that there won't be this sort of singularity moment where we're going to wake up one day and go, "Oh, we have now entered the transhuman age." It's sort of this ongoing adjustment that we will always just. It'll always just be part of us.
Mm. What I think, though, will be a new kind of, there'll be a separation. There'll be another kind of division of humanity. Like currently we see those groups that reject modern life. I think of the Amish community, for example. I think the anti-vax community, those who've never been vaccinated, you know, they kind of form their own communities now. And it's quite aware now that there are people actually advertising, looking for people who've not been vaccinated to donate blood. And I think it becomes a premium.
I saw that.
You know, it'll be those who are the really pure people, those who don't have modifications, don't have any, you know, implants and things. They'll become like a, maybe they might become the purest humans. Then we'll have, maybe we'll go from being Homo sapiens to, and probably AI Homo sapiens or transhuman Homo sapiens, where we allow that when people consciously in communities separate. And they'll decide that they don't want to live in a community where you can meet somebody in the street who may have an enormous strength, and you won't be able to predict it. And like a bit like the concealed weapon thing, you know, like the carrying a gun, license to carry a gun or not, and they have this amazing power to disarm you or rob you or whatever. It's something that it's as a species we're going to have to confront, accept. Laws will have to change. You know, the whole point of lawmaking is you have to keep up with technology, the pace of change in life. And the amount of laws that have been brought in over the last 150, 200 years is incredible because of the advances in technology in my lifetime. I mean, the biggest thing I noticed 20 years ago was the telecommunications laws, with the rise of online pornography and hate speech and so forth. You know, we're thinking about the children, the access to things like that, you know, and it's very difficult to legislate without having, we don't have a third eye. We don't have a time machine to go to the future. We can't be sure how it will pan out. We are optimistic, and I'm inherently optimistic.
Yeah, me too.
You are. And I tend to think it's a trial and error thing. And I think you can be, I like to think I plan for the worst, but I hope for the best. I'm always skeptical, definitely skeptical of our leaders. But I like the idea of avoiding one, you know, unitarian government. I don't like that. That scares me. I like the idea when you can vote with your feet. For example, if you don't like the way your country's running, you know, you can immigrate. And I like that idea. For example, we might have countries, perhaps China, maybe Japan, whichever, some advanced society that's embracing technology who wants to go down that transhumanist route and allow this by legislation, allow people to augment their bodies, you know, let that society experiment with itself.
But is it necessarily a bad thing? I mean, sure, it can be, but again, isn't it? Okay, let me rephrase my question. If you are somebody who, for whatever reason, lost his legs and has to either spend the rest of his life in a wheelchair or be given the opportunity to have perhaps some sort of, you know, robotic legs, but you'll be able to walk again. You know, that's, I can't really see the bad in that.
No, I don't. And I totally agree with you. We want to embrace that. We want to be able to give life back, to, you know, to allow people to enjoy a full and you know, enjoyable life. And I'm very much in favor of all those advances. As you say, the Oscar Pistorius example is a wonderful example. I mean, he's not just being made whole again. He's been enhanced. I mean, the argument against him competing in sports was that he had an amazing advantage. And that is the nature of some technology. I mean, I know there's technology now in terms of optics that you can implant lenses and so forth in human eyes to enhance our vision, you know, to do away with spectacles. And, you know, spectacles have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, and it's been accepted. Same with walking sticks. You know, we're going to go from the walking stick that's something you pick up to something that perhaps is incorporated in your body. I know there's these new exoskeleton frames where you can walk around wearing this frame setup around your legs and hips, and if you fancy sitting down, you literally just sit down as you as if you're standing, and then just stand up again. Wonderful innovation, and that's the trouble. Innovation is happening.
Yeah, sorry. What I'm wondering is, I think we will know when it becomes too cyborg-like.
Yeah, and I think back to Dolly the sheep, and you might. May not be old enough to remember that. I remember Dolly the sheep.
I remember
when they cloned the first embryo. And I thought, whoa, where are we going here? And then I realized then we're at, you know, perhaps a precipice where things may run out of control. And the idea I thought of the master of the super race, you know, going back to Nazi Germany, where the whole idea was to create this amazing army of superhumans that could do anything and just clone them. And I think that's something that you'll never get away from, because that's always part of human nature, you know, to fear the unknown. But I think the biggest fear was the fear, the insidious fear, the vaccination fear, you know, putting something in your blood that goes through the blood-brain barrier. Once it's your brain that has to be protected, I think, Jeremy. If you can keep it away from the brain, so the brain is completely autonomous, so you preserve the spirit, the character, the personality of that person, and don't allow it to be, you know, taken over by the machine or something even more insidious through the blood-brain barrier. That scares a lot of people more than, you know, the more obvious, explicit technological augmentation, where, you know, you can see wires, you can see a frame, you can see, you know, switches and things. It's this micro technology, you know, the micro nanotechnology that scares me very much.
But there's also a meta narrative that's coming through there, because ultimately, if you just take it to the extreme, right? So let's just start removing organs from a person. So you take off their legs and take off their arms and start replacing internal organs with, you know, some sort of robotics. At some point, you're going to end up asking the question, okay, so what does it mean to be human? And I think that's kind of the meta conversation that goes on when one talks about transhumanism, because, you know, if you have a missing arm and that gets replaced, I don't think any sane person is going to say, this is a bad, bad idea. But I think you might say it's a bad idea if your entire body has become robotic.
Yeah. Dr. Brian Malone, Robert Malone, sorry. He wrote a wonderful article that we posted on Principia Scientific last March, the brain computer interface system. And like a lot of people who've had to been at the front line fighting the troubles during the pandemic, you know, the overreach of governments, you know, the psychopathic politicians and the billionaires who want us to be programmed, who want the transhumanist new industrial revolution, they scare me, because they really want to do it very underhandedly. To me, it's a secret science we all fear. Secret science, I've been talking about this for 13 years at Principia Scientific, where there's no open debate allowed. There's always a hidden agenda. So much happens behind closed doors. That's the thing. If it was openly discussed, if we could do experiments and tests openly, if we had honest governments, though we're looking at the welfare of the greater good, then maybe we could embrace it more, you know, without so much fear. But I always worry about the military-industrial complex, always looking to defeat the enemy, you know, the Americans versus the Russians and so forth. You know, it's this kind of never-ending, constant tribal warfare that we seem to face. It's inherent in our character, maybe, as humans, as a species. We fear those who are different from us. And when I was listening to your interview with Brian Beletic, he made a very good point that the way Western governments have been working, the American government, the British government, they want to dehumanize the Chinese and the Russians. And that's our greatest fear, isn't it? That when you start dehumanizing other populations, it's easier then to allow them to be guinea pigs, allow them to be destroyed and manipulated.
Exactly.
So that is my fear. And our governments were doing it to our own people during the nuclear testing era, if you remember. After the Second World War, you know, so many, literally 40,000 British service personnel were put exposed to nuclear fallout, you know, just for testing bombs. And it's acknowledged now that the governments were irresponsible. You know, they were really immoral in the way they used this technology to see how far they could push it. And with those experiments, they know, you know, the real power of the nuclear age. And it's something that... that I fear, because it's the person with the finger on the button. You've got sleepy Joe Biden falling over. In theory, he's got his finger on the nuclear button. We know he hasn't, but it's the people behind him, the unseen people. You know, those are the ones who scare me the most, Jeremy.
Yeah. Okay. So what you're actually saying, John, is that the fear is not the technology itself, but the people who are using it.
Yeah. Yeah. We were very fortunate. The Manhattan Project was that time where the idea was to create nuclear technology. I mean, the amazing coming together of literally thousands of scientists in America, the great and the good, who wanted to end a world war, you know, not to start further wars. And after the war, we again saw scientists in the West who again wanted, they did not want a dominance. They didn't want American hegemony. They wanted actually to share that technology for the betterment of all humanity. So that technology was leaked to the Russians and the Chinese to level the playing field. And we're very fortunate there that while there are good people who see the greater good, who want to do something right, there is hope. But we never, ever seem to get away from the element in society, the psychopathic element. We must always be vigilant, Jeremy. There's always the risk that something will bite us on the butt and catch us out. And people nowadays have been told to switch off and not worry. It's human nature just to switch off and you know, not fret too much. As I said, the human brain has shrunk 15% in the last 200,000 years. There's a reason for that. And, you know, if it shrinks much more, Jeremy, I think we're doomed.
That's what my wife said this morning to me, that her fear about AI is that it's going to make people even dumber.
You know it. You know it. I know it. I don't use a pen and paper anymore. It's incredible, really. When I try and pick up a pen, it feels like I'm a child again, like I'm 5 years old. It's so unfamiliar to me. I'm just so used to pressing buttons, a keyboard. It's shocking. And again, I don't like going on a car journey without my smartphone. I remember back in the day, I'd carry a paper map. I navigated everywhere with a book, a paper map. And that did me very well. But I feel lost. I feel almost naked going anywhere, Jeremy, without my smartphone on me in my car. You know, what's happening to us?
Exactly.
We're more like children, aren't we?
And you often hear that saying, yeah, but what did we do 20 years ago when we didn't have cell phones? Well, the reality is we lived differently to what we do now. Cell phones are very much part of our lives. You know, you can't spend almost a day without it because it's got everything. there's an interesting aspect of transhumanism. It's not even part of our body, but yet it is.
Yeah. And we're all in fear of being left behind, aren't we? I mean, I know my children growing up, they always wanted the latest, you know, in terms of clothing, the latest in technology. They wanted the new Xbox, the new PlayStation, you know, whatever it might be. And we are, it's the modern life, isn't it? The idea of the consumer society. We're partly looking to spend as much money as we can to get the best we can, but we're in a rat race. I remember when I was teaching full time and I got so sick of my job, Jeremy, I calculated one day a week, I was working just to pay off my car loan. And I thought, if I had a crappy old car, I could have a day off every week. And that's how it gets you, isn't it? You realize you're going to work to pay bills, which you wouldn't have to pay if you weren't caught in that work cycle. You know, you're on that, you're like the mouse in the cog, you're running around the wheel forever in the rat race and not being able to escape it because you just feel that the brainwashing has taken over you. You've got to keeping up with the Joneses kind of thing.
Do you know anybody with the surname Jones?
Yeah, I live in South Wales. The person's named Jones. Yeah.
So do you keep up with them?
Yeah. Well, we have to define each other by the first two Christian names, the first two forenames. You can't just give like David Jones. You have to give Dave, what's his middle name? Otherwise you can't identify because there's 10. There's 10 of Joneses.
We're talking about being optimistic and sort of pessimistic or nihilistic earlier. Now, and I've said this so many times on my show, and I'll say it again because I think it's worth repeating. But optimism can also be completely pointless. It can be hopium you know, it can also just lead to very poor decision making. The point is that you have to kind of find a way to balance that pessimism or that critical or that critique, shall I say, with the optimism. So, and it's difficult to explain this, but if you live on the African continent where there is a lot of chaos around you, things are broken. Try and live each day with 8 hours of no electricity, right? So we have to adapt to it. Now, if I take the attitude that a lot of people in the first world take, where everything is falling apart and it's easy to be pessimistic, I'll sink, because in Africa, and Africa's a big place, but I'm generalizing here. But the reality is that if you do take that attitude, you will sink, because you have to be optimistic, but you can't just be optimistic. You also have to do something with that information that you have. It's a whole different mindset. You know, in Canada, for example, I've got friends who emigrated there from South Africa, and they say to me, everything works. And I know where Alex is, you know, in Australia, I've been there. I've been to Sydney. Everything works. So you end up becoming very desensitized to the fact that everything is working. And it's a beautiful thing on the one hand, but it can also make you complacent and lazy, I think.
I do agree with you. And I think that's the benefit of age. As you get older, you kind of get wise and you look back on things and you can partly make a more an objective assessment of where we are. I look back to, you made the point earlier about what life was like maybe 20 years ago and what we did then. It's a similar analogy, isn't it? You know, you can go to another country and they may be 20 years behind. I used to live in America with my American wife, and I got the sense that they were probably 10, 20 years ahead of us in social matters, in the way the rise of the woke movement and so forth, which we don't agree with. But I mean, I saw that in the late 1990s. I saw where it was headed, and I didn't like it. I went into my stepdaughter's school in New York, and I saw the facilities were amazing, but the level of education was so low. And when my stepdaughter came over to the UK and we put her into an English school, she really struggled because there were fewer facilities. It was almost like going into a very like a slum environment. And it's crazy because we're both first world nations, but the facilities was disparity in what on the provision side of it. Where in New York, she'd be having a laptop computer to work with. And in the UK back then, everything was paper and pen and so forth. It's always an adjustment. And I think the thing about the human species, we're like very adaptable. We're the only species that lives on every continent. So inherently, we are kind of gifted. You know, we can adapt. But I think we're very lazy. And I think humans as a species are very lazy. We want to put our feet up and relax, don't we?
Definitely.
There's always a trade-off. Always a trade-off.
John, I just want to quickly do an ad break. I'll be back with you shortly. My name is Jerm. I'm chatting to John O'Sullivan. This is TNT Radio.
Climate lockdowns have arrived. France is banning short-haul flights to combat the climate crisis.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Here is CBS News reporting on France's government flight bans.
France has officially banned short-distance domestic flights in an effort to cut the country's carbon emissions.
The new law went into effect this week. It means people can no longer travel by air if the same journey can be made by train in under 2.5 hours.
The French government rejected banning flights up to 4 hours and opted to only do 2.5. The French citizens should be grateful. Is this just banning 2.5 hour flights to flatten the climate curve? Make no mistake, this is a war on freedom of movement. Every previous activity you may have thought you enjoyed, cheap, reliable energy, plentiful food, freedom of movement, are now going to be banned in the coming climate emergency. You were warned of these COVID-style climate lockdowns. They have arrived. Let's start the Great Reject. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
I came to clean and noticed there was no food in the house.
She told me her sister just forgot to pay a few bills.
He was in for his monthly trim when I noticed the bruising.
Is there anything I can do?
Thousands of older Australians experience elder abuse every year. If you're concerned about someone you know, you don't need to have all the answers. call 1-800-ELDERHELP for free confidential information and support.
Germ warfare is Jeremy Now on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, John, since we're talking about AI in this conversation, I'm going to play you something. I'm going to explain to you what it's all about after you've listened to this. I'll stop it there. That's pretty much the entirety of it. Now, so that's a guitar solo, John. Right. Mm-hmm. What makes that different? Okay, you're going to guess right. It's got something to do with AI.
Yeah.
So ChatGPT wrote that entire guitar solo. It was played by a guy. What he did was it created the guitar solo in sheet music for him, and he went and played it and recorded it. How's that?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's simple because what you've got is the parameters are already known. It's within a structure. It's within a known structure. And this is where AI is very, very useful. It takes over the mundane chores, just like a computer does. If you like an accountant, even more useful perhaps would be like a calculator. Rather than have you do all the sums yourself, in the calculations yourself, you have a machine do it because the parameters are very well known. They don't vary, they don't change, they're not affected by outside influence. And that's what you have a music score. Effectively, you can reduce a music score to binary zeros and ones, and you can play around with that. And it's a wonderful thing, just like you can with chess. This is why AI is so good at playing chess. You know, within the bounds of the game, with the rules of the game, it's wonderful. But put it out in the real world where anything can be thrown at it, and it doesn't have the computing power, doesn't have the ability to prioritize.
Exactly.
You know, it just couldn't handle it. And this is why I don't fear it yet. I've not seen anything demonstrated. And to go back to what I said about the perfect example is a battlefield, because the battlefield is the cutting edge of all technology. And Ukraine, we're seeing the drones winning on either side. Yeah, the drone warfare is the key here, because it's simple, very simple, cheap technology, and defeating more high technology. The HIMARS system, for example, is being jammed by Russia. It's like sticking your finger in the circuit and you fuse the fuse box. If you can jam something, you can disrupt it very easily. And that's the problem with AI. It's not beyond being sabotaged,
and but, it can easily be John. But sorry, I'm jumping in there. Drones can also be used for good. Imagine if you could send up a drone to take video, 4K video footage and photographs of a beautiful farm, wherever for purposes of tourism.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. and you asked it to capture all the great. Scenes below it. I mean, that's using it for good.
Another good example, Jeremy, is in archaeology and in forensics and police work. You know, for example, a good example is that somebody who's lost. I mean, there's been instances where people have been out on trips in the wild, they've got lost. You can send a helicopter up costing thousands and thousands, or if you've got a cheap drone for a few $100, send that up, and that's just as good. And I think that, you know, search and rescue is a wonderful use of drone technology.
Yes.
And we're going to see a lot more of that. We're going to see it in policing. A lot of people are very worried about, the lack of police CCTV is one thing. I know a lot of people are scared of CCTV cameras, but I'm more in favor of the drones, because we could actually do away with a lot of CCTV and have focused policing where there's a crime area. Rather than have cameras everywhere, you just send up a drone. And I'll give you a perfect example.
Sorry, go on. Sorry.
I want to give you a perfect example of where the CCTV technology is coming to a crisis. And that's in London, UK, over here in the UK. You may know that there's what's called a ULEZ, ultra low emission zone in London. The mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, in his great wisdom, decided to pretty much fit the whole of London with CCTV cameras and charge people for the privilege of entering a city centre because of high emissions. And wonderful citizens who have realised they're not putting up with this nonsense have gone around putting on their high-vis vests and acting like we work for the council. And with a pair of clippers, they've been disconnecting all the cables, cutting all the wires of the CCTV cameras. So poor old Sadiq Khan is not cashing in with his ULEZ charges, and people aren't paying an extortionate tax just for the privilege of driving around London. It's wonderful. So again, he might have to resort to using the drone technology. That might be his retaliation, Jeremy.
But you know, again, using the example of CCTV, now let's turn it around into something good. I live, as you know, in South Africa. We've got some of the worst crime in the world. All right. So I think we average around somewhere between 60 and 70 murders per day, and about the same in rape. That's very, very high. If you live in a house that's a bit big, or let's say, you know, double story or something to that effect, CCTV cameras in your house can actually be very, very helpful. The last thing you want is somebody in your house and not knowing.
Totally agree with you. Another thing you just reminded me is another good thing about smartphones and cheap smartphones is my daughter's done this and friends have done this, usually young women. When they're out and about in a strange environment, they'll use their phone and call somebody, and it gives them an extra level of sense of security. They're on the phone to somebody they know, plus the fact that their phone, as you know, with triangulation, with the masts, with the cell towers, you can triangulate exactly where they are at that location. So again, it's a good thing. Technology is not all bad, and I'm all in favor of that. And let's look at the whole picture here. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always an antidote, isn't there? For the wrongs, there's always an antidote. It's a constant war.
Exactly right, John. Sorry, I find myself constantly frustrated at precisely what you're talking about. And this happens all around us, from our immediate circles to the internet. Okay, and this is what I'm talking about. People who are supposedly on our side, many of them are just consumers of fear. Everything is about the worst. They're coming for us. Schwab is unstoppable. Gates is going to do this. Musk wants to put chips in the back of our head, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just this constant sensational pessimism. And yes, a lot of that is true, but now what? Are you just going to keep consuming it and just telling everybody in WhatsApp groups, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing about it? Are you trying to buffer against it? Are you trying to break free from it? Are you doing something about it? Are you creating networks? Are you growing your own food? You know, all that sort of thing. Are you supporting your local farmer? Are you actually doing more than just consuming the fear?
Yeah, I say refuse to be swallowed up by the victim mindset. We live in a society now, Western society, it's all about big government, isn't it? Government does everything for you. It's usurped the traditional power of the family. Usually the father figure, the mother, each had a wonderful role, and we've lost that. And I think when we work, let's get back into our small communities. Start off with the family, then you've got the neighborhood, then you've got the town, the village, and so forth. I like that. And I want to get government out, because my fear is big government, and they want us dumbed down. They want us just pretty much to be automatons. So yeah, they want us in fear, because fear makes us dependent on the government. And bad education is part of the problem as well. We're poorly educated. They don't teach us what we really need to know. Speaking as a school teacher, 20 plus years in the UK education system, most of the stuff I was teaching kids, I would, you know, think, well, is this really useful? Is this going to prepare them for life? We never taught kids how to do the tax returns. We never taught kids how to interact with other people. You know, never taught them about the law, you know, how to make the best of the law, you know, to do things legally. Everything was just learning garbage, effectively. I mean, it's a shame that we need to reinvent our education system, bring back family values, restructure our society in such a way that we're not fearful of government anymore. I mean, as they say, a lot of people, like myself, have become more libertarian over the years. I've abandoned that sort of left-wing brainwashing I grew up with. And I think we've got to empower people, become more autonomous, and get away from that victim mentality that so much of us, so many people now have surrendered to.
And you know what, John? I've said this also, I think, to you and others before, and I'll again say this, that living in a failed state, which I do, because there isn't one country in Africa that is a success story, I can honestly say that in many ways I'm blessed, because when you have a government that is too inept and too inefficient to actually successfully lock you down or to oppress you, then it forces you to network and find the private sector networks. You know, if there are potholes in the roads, it's a very strange dichotomy. You can go to a shopping mall and there are 5G networks, but the roads are full of potholes and it's completely broken and very difficult to get to those shopping malls. Okay, so it's this weird paradox. So what happens? So then the private organizations come and fill the potholes, you see. So it forces people to do something. You can either fall into that victimhood mentality or you can fall into the mindset of being a winner.
Yeah, and this is one of the things I believe we're in a war footing. We've been in a war footing for at least a generation where our real enemy is our own governments, and we've had to team up. We've teamed up, ironically, internationally. You, I, other people like TNT Radio, we've all come together, haven't we, collectively, fearing that we're under danger, but not giving into the fear, prepared to fight back. And we're organizing, we're rallying the troops, if you like, prepared to push back. And we are succeeding. And we're doing it. It's very much empowering. I feel very empowered, and I feel grateful to have met you and got count you as a friend. Because I know together there's things you know that can help me, and vice versa. And we don't need government as much, you know. And that's the solution, isn't it, Jeremy?
Even at all, actually, you don't need government at all. But that's a whole different conversation.
How far are you prepared to go? Some people will go all the way. Some people will want some measure of government. It's a philosophical argument.
Yes,
I'm prepared to have that. You know, let's have that debate sometime.
I see that we're running out of time. I like to make this joke. People often ask me, you know, you mentioned you find yourself quite libertarian. I don't know where I slot into, but a lot of times I say this: I'm an anarchist monarchist. What that means is I'm opposed to the state unless I am the state.
Yeah, I get you. It's your sovereignty. You want your sovereignty. I've claimed my sovereignty back. For most of my young life, I was a school teacher. I never left the education system. I was wrapped up in cotton wool in schools and universities and back in the system again as a teacher. And I always voted Labour. I always thought government was the solution. But as I got older, I realized it was encroaching on all our freedoms. And I got to the point where I realized that the stuff I was teaching my students was wrong. It blatantly was wrong. It was untruths. So at some point,
Sorry, John, time is very quickly running against us. And I want to give you a chance to promote your show. So let's rather do that.
Yeah, right, Jeremy. I'm on tomorrow night with my colleagues, Joe Olson and Joe Posma. We're doing the Sky Dragon Slaying Show, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S. And we've got a wonderful guest. We've got Troy Von Brock, who's talking about the unified theory of everything, talking about the work of Norbert Schwarzer and the idea that most science can be linked up and have one theory for everything. So you won't need to go into separate lessons for biology, chemistry, and physics. You just learn the basics, and it's wonderful. Einstein tried to crack it. He couldn't do it. More heads are coming together now and having another go. Can we unify science, Jeremy? It should be interesting.
Just very quickly, and I mean quickly, What did you think of your conversation? I think it was 2 weeks ago about the planes or the supposed planes. Very quickly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I do believe in it. I believe it's highly likely that they were images. They were, the whole thing was fake.
My man, you get a high five from me. I love that response. I love anything that challenges the status quo. Okay. John O'Sullivan, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thanks, Jeremy.
I'll catch you in about 2 weeks' time. Always a pleasure. And thank you, Alex, for, well, I don't know what you did today. Everything went fairly smoothly. It's been a few days of smoothness. I'm very, very happy. I hope you have a good weekend, Alex. I'm off. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.